So hi everybody, and thanks for being here, and what a great crowd. And thanks to Occupy for causing this to happen and for making people think about inequality, my favorite topic. I love promoting class warfare. And I just wanted to start by acknowledging that we're on stolen Coast Salish territory. Harsha asked me to talk about housing and inequality, so I immediately turned to the website about the 10 most expensive housing properties in Vancouver, one of which is 4719 Belmont. So this is a quote. "The westernmost swath of West Point Grey has become a destination for the super rich. No wonder. The area combines huge lots with grand Shaughnessy-style manors and views of English Bay, all without the commute across the Lionsgate Bridge. 4719 Belmont boasts a central courtyard with a retractable pyramid-shaped glass roof. Interior design was handled by British decorator David Laws, who revamped 10 Downing Street for Margaret Thatcher. On the right is Joseph and Rosalie Siegel's $12 million spread. The home was designed to accommodate the couple's many philanthropic events. The formal dining room seats 34. Other features include a chandelier once owned by Mussolini. And a glass spa with an oval-shaped pool. So anyway, I'll stop there. And I started trying to write something similar about the downtown east side. Okay, here it is. The easternmost swath of the downtown area has become the destination for the super poor. No wonder. The area includes about 5,000 SRO rooms that are 10 feet by 10 feet, with one window on often filthy airwells, smelly hallways, no personal bathrooms, no kitchens, plus cockroaches, bedbugs, and mice. Nothing by Margaret Thatcher's designers, and nothing previously owned by Mussolini. But hey, we could really use some of those retractable pyramid-shaped glass roofs over our airwells. So I guess we all know that the housing situation in Vancouver is atrocious and absurd. So here are some things I've heard in the last few months about the state of housing in Vancouver. From Al Draycott, who's the city's housing relocator, this is what he told a homeless person with mental and physical illnesses after filling out an application form for BC Housing. He said, "It will take between 7 months and 23 years to get you in." From Shane Ramsey, this was at a meeting last week, he's the head of BC Housing. He said, "The wait list for supportive housing is about 1,000. And the wait list for non-supportive housing is about 12,000 to 14,000. And he said, while BC Housing has found some housing for about 125 residents of the First United Church shelter, it's filled back up again. So I heard from a young woman I met at a meeting of a committee of the Board of Trade, "The housing situation here is so bad, I'm leaving as soon as I can." And from a homeless woman who lives at the First United shelter, when I asked how it was to live there, she said simply, "Hell." So now I'm back to Point Grey. There's another house there, 4707 Belmont. It's a 45,000 square foot single family home that's estimated to cost $31.5 million, including a lap pool and a squash court. The amount of money that this home cost would fund 157 units of self-contained housing on city-owned land in the downtown east side, almost enough to empty out the First United shelter. It would provide enough square footage for 100 450 square foot self-contained units. We took a Carnegie Action Project, took a group of homeless and SRO residents there for a demo against inequality last year. It was a great demo, except no media showed up except for APTN and Vancouver Media Co-op. So what is it with the media that they won't cover class issues? So one really good thing about Occupy is after the Occupy movement started, CBC called up my colleague Wendy and said, is there any inequality in Vancouver? After we had tried, like Seth has, all last year to raise the issue of inequality. So anyway, I read the information about the Belmont property on a real estate website, and at the top of the page is a blurb about the Realtors Care Blanket Drive. It says, people depend on Realtors Care Blanket Drive, which I'm sure is true. What started as a compassionate offer of simple warmth to those living on the streets in Vancouver is now the largest, longest-running charitable blanket and warm clothing collection in the region, which they're proud of. And why do we need blanket charities? Because housing prices are way too high and people's incomes are way too low and welfare is $610 for a single person. And why should the human right to housing depend on the market system, the capitalist system, when it's clear that it's completely, utterly, totally screwed up?
Hear, hear.
And why should people who want to do something about it limit themselves to blanket drives? So here's the housing situation in the downtown east side. Mark Williams, he's a developer, he bought 5 lots, including the old Pantages Theater, for about just over $1 million. And then a few years later, he is wanting to sell that property for $8 to $9 million for unearned profit. And when he couldn't sell the property outright for that exorbitant profit, he decided to make his bucks off condos that will destroy the low-income neighborhood and its assets. So what right does this guy have to take over land that has been land for low-income people, and what right does he have to use it for condo owners? At CAP, a Carnegie Action Project, we've been saying that one solution to the housing crisis would be if governments built social housing that low-income people can afford. In the downtown east side, we need about 5,000 new units of self-contained social housing at $375 a month. We have about 700 people in the downtown east side living in shelters now. That means they're homeless, which is more than we had in 2008, by the way. And it doesn't count people living on the street. Plus, we have 3,500 privately owned SROs, some of which are now renting for upwards to $1,000 a month. So this is why First United Church fills up after homeless people have found homes, because the SROs are too expensive and gentrification is pushing up the rents and pushing them into the new social housing units. The city hasn't bought any land for housing in the downtown east side in 3 years, in spite of the fact that its policy is to buy one lot a year. Rich Coleman and the Liberal provincial government paid for, and quote, an SFU study that says it's cheaper to build good housing for homeless people than to leave them on the street. But they only built a net of, according to Seth's group, a net of 250 units between 2005 and 10, and only 4 of the 14 sites they promised for the end of 2010 have been built, and it's almost 2012. The province has a $1,250 million fund sitting in a housing endowment fund, but they won't use it to build housing when they know it's cheaper to house homeless people than live them on the street. It's so absurd. So what could be so terrible about social housing? China is building 36 million units. Hong Kong has 50% social housing. In Vancouver in the 70s, we had an average of 449 units a year built here. In the 80s, we had an average of 768 units of social housing a year built just in Vancouver. So people who own property here are making a killing. People who don't are being screwed big time. We know the system is broken. I've even heard two people I know in the financial industry who tell me the whole system is broken and throw up their hands. One of them told me that algorithms are buying and selling stock, and they don't think it's right. Both Vision and the NPA want developers to build basically what they want. They rule out any speculators tax or intervention in the market. I can't, you know, the province, knowing it's cheaper to build housing, still refuses to do it, but they love announcing, re-announcing, 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 and re-announcing the same units. The feds are a complete lost cause, even though building housing would be a great way to get the economy going again. And these are, hey, they're not even the compassion arguments, the real arguments, the arguments that would make the most sense, right? The arguments that could count most about the folks desperate to escape the SROs, the streets, and the shelters so they don't have to die. Here, here. So, yes, we do need a change in this stupid, uncaring, illogical, unfair, cruel, greedy, killer market system, and the sooner the better. And I think one of the things the Occupy movement has done is increased the increase in inequality to the point where the corporate media are having a hard time ignoring it, and that's great. And I think the Occupy movement has also added an element of urgency to that recognition about the inequality, which is also great. And I think it's also added an element with the no one is a leader and the talking and everything. It's added the element that our processes for governing also stink and need to be changed. When Seth was speaking, I thought, yeah, that's all great. All those things, we know that. I've been fighting for those for probably four decades. But now, and in my younger years, I would have thought, you know, if we just vote for the right politicians, we could get things changed. But we've had a few decades of failure at that. And the worst thing about inequality is that it allows the richest to somehow control the images and the thoughts and the activities of masses of people. Like some of you coming here probably noticed one of those going on over there at BC Place. And as Harjap was saying, the corporations have been so successful using things like free trade deals in reducing government powers that even if we do elect decent governments, a lot of them, the things that they do are like going on trade junkets to get more contracts for corporations. So I think the inequality angle is really resonating with people, and that's why I brought it up tonight. And I have a great little inequality poster there, which I just spent $35 to get copied. So if you would like some, take some. And if you could donate to the cost, that would be fine, but not necessary. And I've been thinking about what should be done. So this discussion here has been really, really interesting to me. Campaign finance, I think, is a big one for political parties. I think there should be a priority on the poor and the environment, and a priority on taking up space and keeping it. And I really liked what Harjap was saying about defying authority and taking over those areas. And I like that idea about going to credit unions and other areas that aren't corporate controlled. So one thing about the Occupy movement, and in this one in particular, was it would be really good if it could really make a point of being in solidarity with the poorest of the poor, the homeless. It's really hard when you, when you're tenting and everything, but there are a lot of services that the Occupy movements have started having to make. And I know at the end when some people are trying to find housing for the homeless people, when the when the movement kind of moved over to the provincial land, all the negotiating power for getting housing for homeless people was gone. Anyway, I think there's some, I really thank you, Harsha, for getting us thinking about all this stuff, and I think we need to, I've been thinking, trying to think, you know, what can we do now? How can we focus this? But I think it's really important to have discussions like this so we can figure that stuff out. So thanks, everybody.